This is the Sensitive CEO Show, igniting sensitive entrepreneurs to grow your heart-centered business. I'm your host, Rose Cox, and this podcast shares with you inspiring and thought-provoking conversations for sensitive entrepreneurs wanting to grow a sustainable online business in a way that feels exciting and aligned with your soul. Along with my carefully curated expert guests, we share science-backed advice, proven strategies, and the systems we use to succeed in our businesses and our lives as highly sensitives, empaths, and introverts. And by the way, if you'd like to be updated on when each episode is released, you can subscribe to the Short and Sweet newsletter. You'll also get weekly recommendations and tips, especially for HSPs, empaths, and introverts. To subscribe, just pop on over to the website sensitiveceo.show or rosecox.com/pod. Now on to today's show. Hey, it's Rose, and welcome to another episode of the Sensitive CEO Show. And our next episode, I have the pleasure of talking with William Allen. William is an author with a writer's heart and a researcher's mind. After getting a degree in psychology with an eye on doing psychology research, he recalibrated for a 30-year career in information technology. Bill retired early from his corporate job to start his hypno-coaching and neurofeedback brain training business, Brain Pilots. In late 2016, he began his blog, The Sensitive Man, about his experience as a highly sensitive man. This blog became the genesis of his first book, Confessions of a Sensitive Man. And William now has a new book, which is called On Being a Sensitive Man, and it's the follow-up book which focuses on how to live in a world as a sensitive man. So welcome, Bill. I never know whether to call you Bill or William, but I'll call you Bill if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, of course. You can call me Bill. That's what everybody calls me. Hi, Rose. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too. Wonderful to talk to you today on this topic as well. And yeah, I guess to start off with, I mean, I know a little bit about your journey, but can you share a little bit with the audience, please?
Yeah, I have always known there was something different about me. I grew up in a very traditional household in a very traditional part of the United States. And boys were supposed to be a certain way. And I was a little bit more emotional, a little bit more sensitive. So I knew there was something different about me. I wasn't quite sure and couldn't put my finger on it. And back during that time, there really wasn't anything written about being highly sensitive. That was years and years to come when Dr. N wrote her book in the mid-90s. So it was always something that I found myself trying to modify who I was to fit into the mold, to fit into the boy code, the man code. Mm-hmm. And I had to do the same thing when I got into corporate work and find myself putting my feelings behind me and trying to be stoic and warrior-like and all that kind of stuff. Well, it wasn't until I got out of corporate work and I was able to start my own business and really kind of focus my attention on what I wanted to do and what I thought was authentic for me, that I started to realize that this gift of sensitivity was just that. It was something that was going to help me do what I did, which was to help other people. I was very fortunate to find out about Dr. Aaron's book, probably in the early 2000s, and I started reading that. And it resonated with me, just like so many people who find out for the first time when they read your book that that's who they are. But because I was a man, it was difficult for me to embrace this high sensitivity trait. It took me about 10 years to really get my hands wrapped around it. And that's about the time I started writing the blog. And the blog was me trying to figure out some questions I had, because there wasn't a whole lot about highly sensitive men. Even in 2016, there's a lot more that's come around since then. But anyway, I spent about 2 years writing blog articles about various topics, what it was like to be a man, what it was like to be a sensitive man, and cultural issues, things like what masculinity is and what it should be, what it's been presented to us as. And this, as you said in the bio, is the genesis of the first book, was my journey as a highly sensitive man. The second book is really kind of a trail guide, is what I like to call it. I don't think yet there's been a definitive guide for highly sensitive people just yet, because we don't know everything we need to know about this trait. But it's a good guidebook, I think. It's a good enough guidebook to help men start thinking about how they can deal with the obstacles, the challenges of being a highly sensitive person, but also embracing the gifts and being positive about this trait and being proud of it and embracing it.
Wonderful. What are the problems that HS men struggle with the most, in your opinion?
Well, like most HSPs, we deal with things like overwhelm and overstimulation, kind of fitting a square peg in a round hole. That's kind of like the way most HSPs feel. Yeah. Don't fit in culturally. But men have a unique problem, and that is that being sensitive is something that culturally, I know there'll be a lot of women who may argue with me on this, but it's a little bit more acceptable for women to be considered sensitive than it is for men to be. So that's one of the things that I think men struggle with internally. That's one of the reasons why we have such a difficult time getting highly sensitive men to kind of come out of the grasses and join the ranks and accept and embrace the trait, is because they're so conditioned, like all of us were, that sensitivity is not something that men are supposed to be. So if I was going to say one thing that really stands out above that, is that getting over that hump of saying it's okay to say I'm a sensitive man, right? And that is what we're all trying to do right now. The books that are being written, the blogs, the podcasts, everything is to get the word out to men and express it in a positive way.
And your blog and your two books are such a wonderful contribution to HSP men to normalize this trait, because it is 50% of males and females that have this trait.
Exactly.
So how do HSP men challenge traditional masculine stereotypes?
You know, it's funny. The thing about us, one of the things I think is great about HSP men and why HSP men are important right now, because a lot of the things that we do because we're wired to do it that way. So we feel emotions deeply, right? Now, that's not to say that other men don't feel deep emotions or feel emotions, but HSP men are kind of wired to do that. I was talking to a guy the other day. He's an HSP male, and he was a prototypical male, very strong, big guy, beard, the whole thing. But he's telling me that he was watching a movie, and at the end of the movie, he just welled up with tears. And he started crying in the movie theater. And I thought, now anybody else would see him as this big burly guy, right? Strong, sort of prototypical male looking figure. But he was showing a very tender side of himself, because the movie moved him. And I've had that happen to me in movie theaters as well. So because we allow ourselves to express this human side of us, which is very human, is the emotional side, right? The feeling deeply. It really challenges this idea that men can't be anything but stoic and unemotional. We can't ask for help. We can't be vulnerable. We can't expose ourselves. We have to be strong and sort of warrior-like. And I think highly sensitive men, especially the ones that are embracing the trait and understanding the dimensions of highly sensitive nature, they're the ones that are going to challenge this whole thing about masculinity. And frankly, I think it's overdue that we look at those things. The statistics are not very good for men right now. The struggles that men have to deal with as a whole, not just highly sensitive men, but a lot of it has to do with not being able to be vulnerable and open with their emotions. So I really think that's where we as men can challenge some of these old traditional role models that we've been handed down, and maybe help modify them some, open it up a bit so we can be human first and then be men. It's not about not being a man. It's about being a human and expressing that through your masculine nature.
Yeah, I love that. So how would you suggest men help to redefine the masculinity?
This is going to be, in my estimation, a multi-generational thing. It's going to be something that we need to start challenging these old role models. I happen to believe that a lot of the problems we have in this world is a corruption of what masculine is, what the masculine energy is, that has been with us for millennia, right? This dominant, conquering, like I said, warrior-like kind of masculinity has gotten us into lots of problems in the world. I think the wars that we see, the climate change issues, because we're exploiting things. We're exploiting the planet. These are all things that are fundamentally, I think, a dotted line back to this type of masculinity. Now, I want to be very clear. This isn't about being against men. I'm a man. I am not against men, but I think there is this sort of toxic masculinity, which is the term I use, not I use, but it's out there, that seems to hegemonic masculinity, patriarchal masculinity, that kind of thing is not giving a fair shake to women. It's not giving a fair shake to many people that are not of the dominant culture. And if, like I said, it's very exploitative. And I really think that highly sensitive men have a role to play here in helping define that. One of the ways we can do that, one of the things I think is most important, is having older, highly sensitive men, or older men, for that matter, who are more enlightened about this, talk to younger men, you know, express to them the difficulties that we went through, and help them understand that they can redefine what this means. It's going to be their generation and the generations afterwards that I think are going to have to live with what happens. And I think in many ways, they're going to be the ones who define it.
And what about women? How can women, HSP women and non-HSP, help as well? Because I think we play a big role.
Well, absolutely. I'm not trying to drop all the child rearing responsibilities onto women, but because we're just at Mother's Day here this coming week, the importance of mothers on raising boys is huge. It's enormous. And what I found too, in some areas, women are subscribing to this old masculine way. This old, they want their boys to grow up to be just like, you know, Clint Eastwood or John Wayne or whatever. The idea is they're not allowing them to be who they are. They're not allowing them to be expressive and be able to be emotional, because that's not the image that they have. So the roles that I think HSP women, particularly because they're sensitive to these kind of things, and to all women generally, is to be able to be more involved in raising the boy and helping the boy, nurture the boy, helping him learn to express his emotions. It might be difficult for some fathers to do this, but then this is where mothers can really have an important impact. When it comes to adult males, be aware of their sensitivity. Learn about the sensitivity. Understand what the trait is. If you're not an HSP female, there's a lot to learn about how HSPs operate, especially in relationships. And there are great books out there on it. Dr. Erin has written, she's an authority on love. Her and her husband are authorities on love and relationships. So that would be a great place to start. But the idea is get out there, learn about the trait, and be engaged with your HSP partner.
That makes so much sense. And I know Elaine and Art Erin put a movie out, didn't they, about HSPs and relationships.
Absolutely. And they got a wonderful book. She's got a wonderful book called HSPs in Love, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
That is absolutely, you know, it's a benchmark book for especially for HSPs.
Yeah.
And relationships.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you recommend for HSP men to relieve stress and anxiety?
Well, I look at it like this. Ever since I had my hypno-coaching and neurofeedback training business, what I learned was about resiliency. You know, we always think about spot treatments, and there are lots of them out there, and I would suggest anybody who is an HSP or an HSP man to learn some of these spot ways of relaxation, where your breathing exercises can be very useful, very quick on the spot, and also doing some meditative type things. But the idea is to keep practicing this when you're not stressed. Because the idea is that you're training your brain to be resilient. So when you do experience stress, and you will, because you can't live through life without it, the idea is that your resiliency will make your recovery time less. And that, I think, is very important. It's sort of like riding a wave for a surfer, right? It just ride the wave out. Don't fight it. Don't go against it. Ride it out. And then when it's over, you're back to calm again. And so that's the things that I would suggest more than anything else is lots of tools out there right now you can get, lots of apps you can get for your phone and stuff, but start building a resilient practice of relaxation and get out in nature too. That's really important, I think, for HSPs.
Yeah, definitely. If you're lucky enough to live around nature, which I know many of us are, but some of us live in cities and it's not always easy to get out in nature, is it?
If you can find a park in a city that has trees, I think that's the key part of it. Trees and grass. If you can get out and do that, it's not the equivalent of walking through a beautiful forest, you know, on a 10-mile hike, but there are benefits of doing that. The things that the trees release, the kind of energy, the oxygen they release, there's things that you gain from doing that. And that's calming and something that I think all HSPs should look for.
Definitely. We're very blessed where we live. We're surrounded by beautiful gum trees. And I'm always just in awe of how majestic they are. And,
yes.
And the smell. I love the smell of the eucalypt as well that comes off.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Very blessed. So I would love you to share what prompted you to start writing your blog, which then led to your book, your first book.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there really wasn't a whole lot of material on MIT. And I had questions that were just, I went to different blogs and read books and so forth. Dr. Ted Zeff wrote some great books, and those are really kind of standards. Dr. Tracy Cooper has written some great books about HSP men, but I had questions that were kind of outside of that. Some of them were, how are HSPs politically? How do they interface with things like sports and traditional things that guys do? You know, just all kinds of topics, relationships, work, you know, things that were going on politically in the environment when I was writing the blog and my reaction to those things. So one thing led to another, and as I would do my normal daily walk, I would start getting ideas. They just come to me, and I'd write them down and to come back. And I built a nice little log of different things that I was going to write about. I found it to be a way of understanding my trade, and I would do some research on it and so forth, and I'd write the blog. And that became, you know, the foundation for the book. The book, again, the first book was about my journey as an HSP male, and the blogs were sort of the initial inquisitive questions that I had about where I was going to go, what I was going to do with that, and it all came together. It was really wonderful, and when I wrote the book, I was surprised at how easy it was to write. I mean, the words just came out of me as if they were coming out of some magical place. So It was something I needed to express, and it was something that I needed to do.
Wow, amazing. And I love that you get a lot of your inspiration when you're out in nature and you're out walking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love nature, yes.
So when you take notes on your walks, do you have an app that you use?
You know what? Typically, if I've got something really, really good and it's a little complicated, I'll just record it on the phone. I mean, I have the headphone. I have music going. It's very calming music. It's very almost like white noise music. I use that to kind of get my brain in a state where I can think. But if I have things I need to capture, I'll just record it on the phone. I'll come back and get it. It'll be like an idea. And the idea will prompt me when I get back, and I'll take that and massage it, and write it down as a thought, a hypothesis or something. And then I write the article from that.
I love that. I've got a little app called Brain Toss that when I come across things when I'm out walking, you can record, you can take a picture, or you can write a short note, and I get back and I've got all these brain tosses that I have to process, and it goes straight to my inbox and my planner. There's so many wonderful apps out there to help us to
Absolutely.
Capture these ideas, isn't there?
Absolutely. I have to look into that one. That sounds like an interesting one.
It's a great one. Yeah, I've been using it for about a year now. And yeah, it's great. It's a good app.
Yeah.
So I would love to ask you how you think being highly sensitive helped in both your corporate career, but also in your coaching business.
Well, in the corporate career, here's a funny thing. After all these years, when I retired from the company I worked at, and I had been there for a long time, and I'd managed a lot of people, when I finally sent out the note that says, okay, I'm leaving in 2 weeks or whatever it was, I got flooded with all these people who sent me these wonderful, thought-filled, loving, nurturing notes that said, you know what, you were the best manager that I ever had, and it was because you cared. And I think being a highly sensitive person, it was hard for me not to care about what my staff was doing. I would have talks with them. I would know how many kids they had, what they were doing for vacation. I would make sure that they were taking time off of work because we were all technical people. We were all logged in at night. We all worked remotely just about, and this was before COVID. And you have to stop people or else they'll keep working all night long. So I had to make sure that was the kind of thing that I did. And I found my style was different than so many of the kind of rah-rah managers that were just go, go, go all the time. And I was more human-centered and less results-centered in terms of, we got our results in, but I wasn't so driven by that. I wanted to make sure that these people were happy. So that helped me a lot as a manager. In my hypno business and in my neurofeedback brain training, I was really connecting with a lot of people who were coming in. A lot of the people that I had, the clients, were highly sensitive people and didn't know it. So I had a connection with them the minute they walked in the door. I found that being one-on-one with people and working with people one-on-one was like my sweet spot. It was easy for me to talk to them. I could build rapport with them very quickly, and they trusted me. I had some different equipment, some things that are not normally found in a hypnotist's office, but things that work really well. And they had to trust me on these things. And they did it, and they loved it. So it opened me up to wanting to help people. And it aided me in the style that I had to communicate, build rapport with them.
Amazing. I wish I had you as a manager when I was in my corporate jobs.
I would have loved to have had you on staff.
And it's such a natural gift of ours, isn't it? To care about people and to ask about their lives or, you know, what's going on with them. And yeah, it's so natural for us that we, I guess, often take it for granted.
Isn't it the funny thing about having a gift? Mm-hmm. Is you're the last person to recognize how exceptional the gift is. It's because it's natural for you, right? It's easy for you. And I think a lot of times highly sensitive people overlook the fact that what we do so naturally is hard for a lot of people to do. And it's hard for people to be able to reach out and connect with people on a very deep level. And that's something I think we all can do very well.
Yes. Well, this has been an amazing talk, Bill. And I've got one final question before we wrap up.
Okay.
When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do?
Well, the kind of things that I had talked about earlier is I do some breathing exercises. So one of the things I learned when I was working corporate is that if you can get oxygen into your blood, it'll get to your brain. And once you oxygenate your brain, it relaxes naturally. But there's a lot of techniques in hypnosis you can use to do, as you know, because you're a hypnotist as well, or hypnotherapist, is that to help calm the brain down. Breathing is one of those things that I do. It really works. It's always worked for me. But for me, it is about getting out in nature. I need to take a break. I've worked at a computer, in front of a computer for most of my career. If you don't get up and you don't get out and walk away from stuff, that can be overwhelming at times. And I think sometimes we feel obligated to finish something, even if it's stressing us out. There's nothing further than the truth. You can take the time to go get out of your setting and go walk and do something else. So anyway, those are the kind of things that I would do. But I meditate every day. again, that builds up resilience over time.
Meditation is wonderful. I love meditation. It's my go-to modality. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. And I will be popping all the links to your blog and to your books, both of your books, in the show notes. Is there anything else you would like the audience today to know or go?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I think we all need to recognize is, especially highly sensitive people, or if you know somebody who's a highly sensitive person, is that it really is a gift, and it really is how you perceive this trait. Some people think it's a burden. It has its challenges. But the things we talked about today about how to neutralize the overwhelm, how to calm yourself down, these are all techniques that unfortunately most of us didn't learn growing up, and how we regulate our emotions. These are all things Dr. Aaron talks about as well. These are all learnable things. These are things you can learn to do that can help you counteract what you consider to be the overwhelming part of the trait, so that you can focus on the beautiful gift that you have, this ability to understand people and to reach out and care about people. And the world needs us right now.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful parting words. Thank you so much again. And it's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you, Rose. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Sensitive CEO Show. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you think it would be useful to someone else, please leave me a review on sensitiveceo.show. Just follow the prompt in the menu. Each month, I'm offering one lucky reviewer a chance to win a one-hour business and mindset audit with me. This in-depth audit covers the five pillars of your online business, and you'll walk away with super clear action steps specifically for you and your business. You'll be re-energized and motivated to step into your greatness. You'll also find all of the show notes for each episode on the website sensitiveceo.show. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe to the short and sweet newsletter. You'll get weekly recommendations and tips, especially for HSPs, empaths, and introverts. And as the name implies, the email is short and sweet. The Sensitive CEO Show, igniting your sensitive superpowers.